Introductions. I'll start. Jeff Risson, Moss Reston.
Greg Schaefer, Clark County Public Works Development Engineering.
Rosie, Public Works Development Engineering.
Steve Baker, Department of Wastewater.
Eric Lima, SGA Engineering.
Mike Nieto, CatWorks Construction.
Andrew Gunther, PLS Engineering.
Mike Odrum, Olson Engineering.
Terry Wallum, Wallum Associates.
Don Hardy, Bridger.
All right, we'll go.
Jose Alvarez, Clark County Chain Planning.
And Audit Village, I'm going to make it.
Gordy Eagler, Community Planning.
Diane Miller, Development Engineering.
Steph Falling, AKS Engineering.
Steve Madsen, Audit Construction.
Mark Damon, Engineer at Large.
All right.
Brody Nieto, CatWorks Construction.
All right, welcome all. Deeb meetings are recorded, and audio is posted on Deeb's website. Review and adopt minutes. Mike had some edits to minutes that he gave.
Very minor edits. Nothing substantive that I gave to Rosie.
Yeah, more grammatical and typo. Anyone else have any changes or motion to approve?
I'll move to approve with the edits I've provided.
Second? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
All right. Upcoming events, Greg?
Upcoming events on the second page of your agenda there, backside, the Board of County Council's work sessions and hearings. Typically have work sessions on Wednesday mornings, can begin as early as 9 a.m., and we invite you to check the grid for specific sessions and the times of those. Likewise, the hearings typically every Tuesday at 10 a.m., with the exception of first Tuesday of the month, typically begins at 6 p.m. in the evening. Specific hearings include a Regional Transportation Council meeting on Tuesday, June the 6th, 4 p.m. We have a work session on June the 7th at 9 a.m. 9 a.m. Okay. This is for the a fee waiver of the pipeline projects and the 2016 comp plan remand. On Tuesday, June the 13th, 10 a.m., I have a hearing on a franchise agreement with Washington State DOT for installation of a storm pipe in the state right-of-way. And then finally, a hearing on 2016 comp plan update, remand, and interim ordinance on land division and rural and resource lands, Tuesday, June 20th, 10 a.m. For Planning Commission work sessions and hearings, this evening is a work session on annual reviews and dockets, Thursday, June 1st. And then finally, a bit of a list there on the Planning Commission hearings. First, a proposal to amend the comprehensive plan and zoning map from a designation of mixed use to industrial land. On the following parcels, I think I'll forego reading each of those. It's, of course, in your notes there. Proposal to amend the comprehensive plan and zoning map from a designation of urban low R1-6 to commercial C-3 on the following parcels as listed. Thirdly, a proposal to amend the comprehensive planning zoning map for a designation of industrial business park to urban low with R1-6 zoning and 1 acre of commercial with neighborhood commercial zoning on the following parcels as listed. All of that on Thursday, June 15th, 6:30 p.m.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? All right. Any Deeb member announcements? Nope. All right. Let's move on to the comp plan updates and bills and amendments. At Oliver.
This will be Gordy. First of all, thank you for inviting us to come give you an update. It looks like this is a project that never ends.
Job security.
Following the adoption, as you all know, after the adoption of the comp plan, it's about 30, 60 days to file an appeal, and the county did receive an appeal both from Future Wise and Friends of Clark County, as well as Clark County Citizen United. There were about 25 issues, and the road board issued their final order and decision on believe on the 23rd of March, and all this information is on the county website. You can read the final order of the road board. And since that ruling came out, we have had several meetings and a work session with the council, with our legal advising the council what the road board ruled on and what are the issues that the county, the road board found the county to be in violation of or non-compliance, and Cody will go through these items. There are one issue in particular that the road board ruled or find the county action to be invalid, and that was the expansion of Bridgefield and the center urban growth boundary and the designation of the parcels that were brought in from agriculture to non-agriculture. And then finally, the growth board also ruled against the county on the rural industrial land bank. But God is going to walk you through the items that the county councilors have advised us to work on to bring the county to not all the items, but to compliance, and the other issues that the council directed us to appeal to the Clark County Superior Court, that would follow a different track. But I'll turn it over to God to walk you through where we are, and so you know exactly what we are doing. Some of you may be familiar that the council did adopt an interim ordinance that is very similar to address the growth board ruling, but I don't want to take any thunder away from Gordy, but if you have questions, we are here to answer them.
While we're awaiting the PowerPoint, so everybody does have a hard copy here in the packet, so identical on the PowerPoint.
That's fine, word, but everybody else is back here, so we'll just go ahead and roll through. Oliver laid the groundwork. What we're essentially trying to do now is come into compliance with those issues that the board chose not to appeal. And the, as Oliver said, 23rd of March, the final decision and order. There was a 30-day appeal period. The county appealed a couple of things, and I'll get to those. Decided to live with a bunch of the rest of them. We have 180 days to come into compliance, which is important. That date is September 19th. And there's a compliance hearing scheduled for the 7th of November. Basically, right now, the Growth Management Hearings Board is the gatekeeper. So even if we do everything they tell us that we needed to do, we have to go back to them, have a compliance hearing, and they go, yep, you've done it, check it off, you're good to go. So.
That's simple.
And we wish it were. So. Yeah, just go to scroll forward one more. So these are the again the packet, the non-compliance, no back one. There you go. Non-compliance issues, the need for the UGA expansion, Valley Grounds, the ag land designation, de-designations for the Valley Ground and the center in Bridgefield, UGA expansions, the de-designation of the land that we put in the rural industrial land bank. In fact, when we did the rural industrial land bank designation, we didn't have the maximum size, which is kind of an odd thing, but urban reserve overlay uses. If you have questions about these, but we can explain. No variety of rural densities, which we're still scratching our heads a little bit about. And the big one was the upzone of agriculture lands, where we went from lowered the minimum parcel size from 20 to 10 acres for ag and for 40 to 20 for tier 2 forest lands. So, what the county is appealing is the need for UGA expansions in Bridgefield and Center, because as Oliver just said, the Growth Management Hearing Board not only said, did we hear, but your plan is invalid because of those expansions. And the ag land de-designations, similar for the same two areas, and then the de-designation of the 602 acres for the rural industrial land. So those things the county is appealing. What we're proposing for compliance, which is the subject of a board work session on June 7th. That's in your packet, and board hearing on June 20th are these issues. Again, downzoning ag and forest back to the way it was before the comp plan update. The comp plan map will be amended to provide for three rural designations, each implemented by its own zone, as opposed to having one designation implemented by three zones. I'm not really sure what the I know what the issue is, but I'm not really sure why it's a big deal. But this is we were challenging, we lost on what we had, so this is what we're going to.
Now, if some of you recall, the reason we made this change during the plan update was to allow for zone change to go to the hearing examiner rather than the once a year comp plan and zone change that goes through the planning commission and then to the council. That this change will just allow you to go to the hearing examiner at any time the growth board found this to be non-compliance.
The next one was urban reserve overlay. Maybe you guys have done some projects in urban reserve. Urban reserve, as it was before the comp plan update, was in our zoning code, but it implemented both a zone and an overlay district, which for us was seemed kind of odd, kind of confusing. And so our proposal was to make it a true overlay and apply it as such, because in some places it is an overlay. And there were some places where it was a zone, we gave it, because it's confusing, it's because it's a rural designation, we call it urban reserve and it's in the rural area. And what we had proposed to do was make it a true overlay and leave the use list alone, leave the criteria for development standards and all that alone. We were appealed because it looked, for all intents and purposes, to the appellants like we were creating something new for rural areas, and which means they didn't understand what it is we were trying to do or what we had before, and the hearings board agreed with them. So what we're proposing to do is to leave it as an overlay, and the use tables and development standards will revert to the underlying zone. So if it's an urban reserve overlay over R5, then you drop back to the R5 standards. The only thing that the urban reserve overlay does really is to give the premature land splitting, premature subdividing of land. That's really what it's. So it's supposed to be a phasing tool. So that's what we're proposing as a remedy. We put in 700 acres as the magical number for a rural industrial land bank, because there's nothing magical about it. That's it. Because the one we have now is 600 acres. We've got fine. If we have to comply, we'll pick a number. It's not like we'll ever be doing this again per the GMA. And the last thing we did, we're doing, is removing 17 parcels from the Battle Ground UGA. Again, they didn't contest it. That's what we're proposing to do. I'll have more to say about that in a moment. All right, so I got this. So we've already been through this and what the county is appealing. I guess I'm going backwards.
Yeah,
I'm going backwards. So let's not go backwards, let's go forwards.
There you go.
Yay. So the proposed changes, the ordinance will be on the grid, and the staff report will be to the comprehensive plan map. Obviously, the legend will change. Ag 10 will go back to Ag 20, et cetera, et cetera. We will make some changes to the comprehensive plan text. We have to say, for example, for rural lands, that we have now have three designations, each implemented by its own zone. And there's all the places in the county code that we changed Ag 20 to Ag 10 now have to be changed back to Ag 20. So it will also be, you'll see lots and lots of pages of code that does that, and the only reason is we have to show it in highlight and strike out. So those will be in the staff report. As Oliver alluded to, the board on April 25th adopted a moratorium on the acceptance of new land division applications for resource in rural lands. That's caused some problems and caused lots of questions about people whether or not they're vested. The hearing on this, which has to happen by state law within 60 days of April 25th, will also be on June 20th. So, two hearings. Only one of them is listed here, but the compliance hearing, if the board goes back and makes Ag 10, Ag 20, and forest 20, forest 40, you won't need the moratorium because there will go on with the zones. Those zones will go away. You will be able to apply for land diminishment. So both of those will be taking place on June 20th.
So if you had one already in now and you were in before the moratorium, they're still honoring that?
Yes. If you're vested, you know, I'm not a vesting expert, but yeah, things that happened since June 28th, actually July 8th, and August 25th, or in primary, will go through.
Which would be really tough to have a complete application by that time, but unless they were contingently vested at pre-act.
Well, yeah, I believe contingent vesting counts.
Okay. Are there any of them?
The last list I saw had 17 applications, and I believe there are a few more than that.
It's likely a few more.
About 12 to 1,500 acres, roughly. Mm. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the next steps, just to wrap this up, all the 68 Commerce Review, which you have the news in progress. We're readopting. We're adopting the 2007 EIS and the 2016 supplemental EIS just as part of the process, so that they're part of this appeal record. We have a council work session on the 7th. That's next Wednesday. There's the hearing date. There's actually two hearings. There are the compliance issues and the land use moratorium. And if the board adopts an ordinance on that date for compliance, it'll take effect 10 days later. That's per the county chart. Planning Commission hearing was held on May 18th. These are the things that we're proposing to change, and there's how the Planning Commission voted. At the hearing, Balogron came in and said, so take the 80 acres, 17 parcels out of our EGA, but we'd like to put urban reserve on it. So that was brought up at the hearing. That's why you see that there's another one at the bottom there that was not part of the original proposal. And the vote on that was 42 to recommend. So, if you want information on the compliance schedules, there's the website. You can type that in your browser. And that's it for us. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Morning, the appeal hearing, is that on the record or is that, can you add new information?
No, it's on the record.
Okay. On the record.
Yes, everything from here out is on the record.
Any other questions? I know one thing that I had heard, I think from Jamie, and I don't know whether we're addressing it in the appeals or whether we're just not addressing it, but it will be coming down the road, is that the de-designation of ag is something came out of the hearing where, you know, we used to be able to take a parcel by parcel and get an ag study done. And what I was hearing, I believe it was Jamie, was saying that the Growth Management Hearing Board indicated that we might have to look at ag countywide now, in expansions. So it's something for us to kind of put in the back of our minds, because if we have to do that for the next expansion, then probably collectively the county is the one that would
yes.
have to do that. It's fallen on the private side in the past, but.
Right. I think there is. What I would call not clear definition of what they said is that you don't have to look at the designation on a parcel by parcel, you have to look at it area wide.
Mm-hmm.
So the question then becomes, what is area wide? Does that mean county wide, or do you have to take a much larger area and call that area wide? So there is no clear definition of area wide.
Okay.
So
that language basically is in the WAC.
It is also in the WAC.
Oh, really?
The Hearings Board didn't just make it up. It's in the WAC, but you have to do an area-wide look.
They just never applied it in the past, I guess.
Yes, they've used that in a number of cases, but Oliver is correct, is that they've never said what area-wide is.
And what I will add is that there are some, in my conversation with our counterparts to the North and elsewhere, there is some possibility that may go all the way to the state Supreme Court for some interpretation, or maybe go back to the legislature for some interpretation. But there are other counties, I don't believe maybe it's Pierce County or Tustin County or maybe Snohomish, that have done something that appeared to pass most in terms of how they look at their ag land. So it is something that staff will be taking a look at and maybe share that with the council, see if that's what we're going to do in the future when we look at some of this ag that bordered existing northern road boundaries. You know, because every time you know that we've brought in ag abutting any UGA would be a challenge that we've lost, be it in Battleground, in Washugo, with the exception of Camus and Richfield, and now the center that immediately annexed, you know, and you can see what the growth board ruled, that because they annexed the property, the growth board still found our action and their action invalid. You know, so this is one area that the county in particular and the cities will engage going forward. How do we look at those ag that immediately abort the UGAs? And do we treat them differently, or do we employ other tools going forward to help us, you know, deal with potential challenge? I'm also aware that there is conversation that the growth board is not happy, and I can say that I'm not speaking for them, but the fact that the annexation statute supersedes the GMA, the question, because you're going to see not only Clark County but other counties adding ag land to their UGAs of any particular city, and if that land abuts the city limits, the city will annex that before the growth board can get to it. They discussed that within their hearings and were very frustrated when they were told that they don't have jurisdiction. You know, so these are areas where the legislature may have to step in, or the court may have to step in and try to resolve. But I'm glad you asked the question. We're looking into that.
Okay. I'm Oliver and Gordy. Just kind of in a nutshell, I'm just trying to understand, what was the gist of the argument against Richfield and Los Angeles expansion? Was it a density issue, or was it a calculation issue?
I think, in a nutshell, the issue is that given the growth target, you know, you may argue whether that is right or wrong. Given the population that the council chose to plan for, and the way that we allocated or divided up the population allocation to all the cities, and then the cities determining whether they have room within the existing UGB to accommodate that growth. What the growth board ruled was that given the amount of growth we were planning for and given the population allocated to those cities, there was no need for them to expand their UGB. So it was based on need, and that the cities haven't demonstrated a need to expand their UGB. And in addition to that, they also rule on the designation.
So basically, two yellow cards.
Yeah.
And we ended up with a red card.
Am I playing it?
If you're into sports.
Any other questions?
No? So that's where we are, and in a nutshell, it's kind of like just going back to how things were prior to the
status quo.
Yeah, going back to the status quo. I don't know what will happen going forward. We are having conversation with the Office of Financial Management. I'm not sure when they will release their population forecast for 2024 update. So it may come out in June. We don't know when it will show for Clark County. So I would say stay tuned. We'll see what that says and what the council will decide in the future, whether to take the OFMI or to land on medium again. I don't know, but that's a conversation that we will have when we issue the number, when we start this again. But to your question about, because we know the cities are going to grow, you know, the question is, what do we do with this ag that surrounds the majority of the UGA now? And we may get to a point where we begin to discuss potential of transfer of development rights.
Yeah.
You know, whether the cities will be receiving ends or receiving areas, those conversations need to happen, because until we can deal with the ag question, it is one that we have to overcome.
Okay. Well, thank you guys very much.
Sure, thank you.
Other questions?
Got your work cut out for you, as usual.
We're on
it. Away.
We're on it.
You're on it.
You've been on it. We'll continue to do it.
All right, fee waiver resolution, which we have Marty down for.
Yeah.
Before Marty comes down, can I quickly have take this opportunity while Marty is coming? I'll also let you know what we are doing, just FYI.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. What's that?
Not to put you on the spot.
Yeah.
So you're back to page 2 of the agenda, the piece of work session. Just give you an overview of the three proposals and our recommendation. So on CPZ 2017-19 Wired, this is on 117th, adjacent to the waste management facility, the waste transfer station. So they're asking to go to light industrial. There's about 3 acres, an acre of it is already industrial. We bought 2 acres from the property to the south that was part of the church conditional use permit. And so they bought that property, did a boundary line adjustment, and so now they have 1 3-acre property that split zones. And so now they need to do a comp plan amendment to do this. Just a little history on that area. When we created the mixed use comp plan designation in 94, we allowed people to have the light industrial zoning underneath. When they did the rezoning for the church, they asked for mixed use, so it kind of sticks out. It's kind of an awkward thing. It makes sense for it to be light industrial, so we're recommending approval on that.
That's to the south of the transfer station?
Yes. Mill Plain Commercial, this is at the northwest corner of 99th Street and 117. They're doing the road widening on 99th there. There's a parcel just to the north that's zoned R16 that wasn't part of any of the abutting subdivisions. It's about 34,000 square feet. So the recommendation was to, it looks like they want to combine it with the property to the south that's abutting them, that's commercial. They're going to lose about 10,000 square feet of their property because of the road widening, so it kind of makes sense to make it commercial to combine those two. WashDOT's going to recommend one access point there probably on both the properties. You're using maybe 3 to 4 potential lots on R16, but it would be tough to get access off of the state highway, so we're recommending approval on that one as well.
Isn't that a stormwater facility right now?
Yeah. Is this the northwest corner?
Is it Florida?
No. It's at 99 and 117.
That whole. Yeah. It's not a storm facility. It's not a storm facility.
A property depression. There's a property at the corner that's commercial, and there's one in the north that's got a house on it, but it's been vacant, and it's owned R16. So that's the one that they're asking for.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's the northwest corner, correct?
Yeah.
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 Yeah, across from Seniors. Yeah. Yeah. Dental facilities across the street. So the last one is 99th and 152nd, just north of there. It's about 80 acres of business park, designated industrial, kind of at the edge of the urban growth boundary. There was recommendation. Well, the proposal is to change it to urban low R16. We don't have a lot of business parks. The land's pretty flat. It's pretty well. The only way we can preserve industrial land or business park is to not rezone it. So we're recommending denial on that.
You're recommending denial on the business park one?
Yeah.
And we're having a work session at 5:30, and then the hearing's in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, too, for allowing us to take 5 minutes of your time.
Oliver, it's always a pleasure. All right, you're up. Animal reform. For fee waiver.
So let me, I'm going to kind of buzz through this. I just mentioned to Councilors Bolton and Olson that I'll give more time with them on Wednesday at a work session scheduled at 9 a.m. But what I've done is I've kind of put together a quick PowerPoint, and we'll walk through that and have a good discussion with the council on where they'd like to go. And our goal is for the council would be to establish an endpoint for the fee waiver program, specifically the projects in the pipeline, and there are roughly 106. Why would we consider this now? There are a number of points here. A plan forward allows the county and customers predictability and certainty. We do encourage fee waiver projects to move forward that are in process, and that meets the original intent to incentivize development immediately. There provides a fairness and equity for all developers. The program was initiated in 2010. The economy was quite different, and since it's improved. And then I always look at maintaining the staffing and workload balance. 105 projects, sorry. If all these projects move forward, there's an estimated $6.79 in fees that would be waived from pre-app to preliminary to final review and building, and roughly $16 million in traffic impact fees. Most of these projects have had activity either in middle of the latter part of 2016 and recently in 2017. Half of the projects you'll see are at the pre-app stage. So a lot of pre-apps came in September, October, November, December. There was a December 31 deadline to submit anything for consideration of fee waiving. In terms of the programs that would be waiving fees, there's about 80,000 in wetland and habitat, about 180 in fire marshal's office, 950,000 in land use review, and then 2.7 building and 2.8 in development engineering. And these are estimates. I will stress that they're estimates because it's hard to determine, especially on the engineering side, when you're talking quantities and areas, that could range from 10 to 20%. I will have a recommendation. I heard that the councilors wanted a fairly simplified recommendation. The recommendations really kind of fall along some of the code provisions we have that you all are familiar with. So pre-applications are good for a year. So we would say if, as long as you're hitting a gate, you're making progress within the annual deadline of a pre-app. If you've got, you're submitting your preliminary review between preliminary and final, getting that done within 18 months. Again, this is an incentive for projects to receive waived fees. You all know from preliminary to final, you have 7 years. If you have a phased project, you have 9, 11, 13, and I just don't know how many blank checks I have that are that long in validity. And then, from the time you get your final site plan completed and you can submit for building permits, we'd ask, 6 months after site improvements are complete, final engineering. So, you have from whenever the pre-app deadline is completed, you have 2 years to get your building permits. I mean, there are these gates. And that's the recommendation I'll have with the board. Council will have this discussion. It's the first deal. I've given them different
ideas in the past, but I think, quite frankly, they were a little more complex and had different moving parts. But I think this is a much more simple set of recommendations, and it does follow some logic, especially out of the first game at pre-op. So that's what I've got for the council. If they give direction to staff to put together a resolution or some other documentation so that people know in those projects in the queue, these are the gates you need to hit. So that's where I'm at.
One quick question.
Yeah.
So on the recommendation, require projects to complete preliminary and final engineering review in 18 months. So that's saying have approved plans. Now when you look at, is that mean that you have 18 months from what date? The pre-op phase?
No, from when you know, so if you had a pre-op September,
okay,
you need to submit your preliminary in by the end of the year.
Yeah.
And then you'd have 18 months from preliminary submittal to final engineering. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I almost think you almost need two separate ones, because when you add the two together, 18 months for a complex project really isn't that long. You get pretty far along to get approval. So the preliminary process on a simple project, when you add it all up, it can be a year pretty easily. So one delay.
Two, three, four approval. So you'd have preliminary approval at month four, month five. Then you have the balance in order to put together your final engineering and submit it.
Yeah. But what
this is an incentive.
13.
I mean, that, I'm going back to the original intent of the program, which was to get projects up and out of the ground.
One, two and a half.
Is there a way to build into the resolution some flexibility?
Well, there's no resolution at this point.
Well, no, or build it. I mean, an idea would be to build in. I mean, I think what Eric's talking about, you know, might be large, complex projects. That might be the type that we want, you know, but they might have a traffic issue that they've got to resolve and things like that, that they just, you know, can take more time.
Anything else that can delay that?
Yeah, because you could have just a court permit takes a year to 18 months.
So I would encourage some thought on this, and I don't know if anybody is able to make the work session. And I'm not sure from the work session we get to, here's a draft resolution, we'll schedule a hearing. Certainly, it makes sense for larger projects, projects that need state agency approvals, barring those unforeseen circumstances, you could maybe build some flexibility in it, but, you know, you heard, last spring, I think it was, you know, when we extended the lifespan of projects that were approved in 04, you know, a couple of councils were saying, you know, we really mean it now. So, I mean, how much flexibility are we going to build into something is going to be a question. And if it's a large project, then, gee, you know, the project's going to, you know, generate a significant employer, jobs and wages. Yeah, I mean, the council may be, hey, let's build some flexibility in it. And there might be some discretion that they grant me on, okay, this is a unique case, and give them a little bit more time.
Building
I'm just
some
looking
criteria.
At the garden, you know, garden variety stuff that shouldn't take more than the 18 months.
Right.
You know, get on with it is the point for this recommendation.
Mike, did you?
Well, I was just going to say, build some very specific criteria around what that flexibility actually means.
Yes.
You know, so that when you guys are coming up to those things, they can figure out, do they need to start cracking the whip a little sooner, or waiting to pull the trigger until they have some things in order?
Yeah.
So that there's no ambiguity in there and people have some certainty about.
And then, you know, I'll wait to hear from the council's discussion and direction on how we even frame up a resolution, the components of that, and then what would they want in terms of flexibility for projects that are out of the ordinary, something that's significant. And it could be that, yeah, we're waiting on a core permit that's going to take 2 years.
Right.
But it's going to generate this kind of, you know, job-producing employment.
The only thing I would say, on timing-wise, 6 months for building permit after final engineering review. You know, if you get your final engineering review in November, October, I mean, 6 months is really tight. We have to hit our construction season window. So that, I mean, it's something to consider about that. Otherwise, people are going to have to be playing with time to figure out, you know, when they can break ground. And again, it doesn't apply to every project, but
and then,
a lot of projects around here can't be built during those months.
No, this just says you have to get your building permit. It doesn't mean you're going to start construction.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, okay. You get your building permit.
You get your building permit.
Okay.
If you get your building permit in December and you don't want to build until the spring, you've got the spring to build.
I got you. Yeah.
So, Marty, you've been talking about projects along here. And, you know, a couple of my concerns is change of ownership.
Right.
And has there been any discussion about that?
Nope.
Will there be any discussion about that?
I don't know, but we probably should have that conversation.
Yeah, because, I mean, before it was, you know, the fee waiver was set up with an applicant and a property owner.
Right.
And if the property owner changes, I mean, the project's still the same.
Yes.
And if it can hinge on the project, we don't have an issue. But if the property owner changes, as I'm sure my two aren't the only ones out there in this instance. I mean, they've been sitting on pins and needles for a year now. Not knowing exactly what is going to happen. And that was all part of their, you know, the year or two leading up to this entire, when they pulled the trigger on this, that was part of their pro forma. So I'm kind of counting on it. So hopefully there's some discussion, or we just say, hey, we're not worried about property owners at this point. We're worried about the project that runs with the land anyway. So the fact that there's a different property owner that was listed on the fee waiver application is not germane anymore.
Well, I can certainly raise it. It's not part of the presentation at the moment, but we can raise it during the discussion. This is just the first... This is the first work session they'll have, and you know, they may need to follow up at other opportunities.
That's next Wednesday. It's next Wednesday.
Yes, okay. Wednesday at 9. So I can raise the issue.
Good.
Another question about just an example, actually. The only way to do it, I'll just call out the project because it's hard to explain otherwise. But so the last one, secure a building permit within 6 months after final engineering review. An example, Erickson Farms Commercial, that's one of our projects. They have final engineering approval. They secured one of the building permits. There's like six buildings in there. But engineering was approved more than 6 months ago. So if this goes into effect, does that mean that there's no waiver on the additional buildings, or do they have 6 months from either engineering review or when they pass the resolution? Do they have any time? Because they didn't have notice it was going away. Do they have the ability now? Do they have that 6 months because they had engineering approval a year ago? And they are showing progress. I mean, they're built. They have permits in for a few of the buildings, but not all of them. But the plan is to kind of move from one to the next, so they're showing progress. So just a thought.
Yeah.
We might want to put in
there are 106 projects, and how many permutations? So.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to keep track of.
Right.
So I guess the suggestion would be to say 6 months after engineering review, or extend the same date from when the resolution is passed. So people have like that option. Now they know it's going away. Here, you either get your building permit in now.
It technically went away last July when they said December 31.
Yep.
You can apply and have fees waived, but after that point, because there are older projects prior to 2010.
Yeah.
So I can't answer that question specifically, but when something gets crafted, I don't know what the board's direction will be in terms of, hey, run this by Beeb again, or we'll have a long lead time for a hearing, so people will have a chance to see it and kind of stress test it and come in and testify. Earlier discussions that I had with the board and my attempts at different kind of recommendations, I presupposed the July 1 effective date. It's not going to happen. So there's no time crunch on this other than getting the board a consensus of the board to say, well, this is what we would like to do. Let's craft a resolution if that's what they want to do, and put it out there, and then hear from people on their generally or specifically on projects, and get feedback, and whatever document that they had asked staff to draft, whether it's a resolution or something else, it can be tweaked. This is not going to be set in concrete and done forever. So it's really the first time for me to get something out in a work session format. It's not been done. So this is a bit of a work in progress. So I wanted to move on to a couple other things for folks who are concerned about permitting and permitting timelines and getting as much done this construction season as possible. I'm going to have Jim Muir come up here in a little bit. How do I turn this off?
Marty, one question.
Only one from you.
Only one question. If this, from what you put together, what does this do to the county's budget to allow for continuation of staff hiring?
Yeah.
Is there a formula? Because, just looking at the planning budget,
yeah,
that's at least 10 positions.
It's a number of positions.
It's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot. So,
If that all comes to pass, if half of these come to pass, it could be 420 grand. That's three or four bodies.
Yeah.
So does that mean looked at with this, or is that kind of not? Or?
Well, the staffing workload balance is up there, and we have information on our fund and our fund balance and current expenses and forecasted expenses and forecasted revenue that we will have available for a conversation if it gets there. It does become complicated and overwhelming. Our fund balances have had some interesting experiences recently, like $3 million gets moved to school impact fee accounts that should have been properly receipted. I don't know if you picked up on that. We have a technology project that's taking more time and will cost a bit more money. We've added positions in the supplemental, just approved on Tuesday. I don't know when those expenses will hit, but we have that information. And I'm always mindful of how does this affect our fund balance, our staffing.
That's a longer. I think there's an equity question about fairness to an applicant.
Yeah.
I think their filter is going to be, even if preliminary is a hard line, I can't imagine more than a third of these 106 are going to be even in the mix. That's just a rough guess. It becomes what is real and what is not.
Well, and having a year, as there's logic to it because that's what the code has, right? You have a year, and as this year progresses and we see those pre-apps that came in September and October, if they don't make any progress, then we know that they were just kind of like, hey, I'm going to throw some men in and hopefully we can make progress on this stuff. Then we'll be able to gauge what the actual estimated impact could be. And, I'm sure that Heath Henderson has more of a concern about the fees that would be waived under traffic impact fees, because $16 million, if that's an accurate number, could be leveraged to get another $16 million.
Or 30 or 40.
I'll let the experts speak on that.
$16 million would probably pay for half 179th Street interchange.
I told the counselors that I wouldn't spend as much time on this because I'm not even previewed with them. Any other questions before I move on just to a few things? Okay. And Jim will be coming up here shortly. One of the things we've done with Aho Construction, because they've been diligent and patient at the same time, the building is going to kind of reestablish a master plan set. So for typically developer builders, they have the, you know, some number of floor plans that they use to build off of.
Yep.
Aho has submitted a half a dozen, 8, 10, I don't know how many plans so far, but they've submitted plans that we'll review and you know, if they're, you know, eventually approve, and then we'll reissue out these master plans. That'll help with kind of the true kind of you know, developer production builder, and that will help free up some time for other builders in subdivisions. I'm really kind of taking a hard look at how stormwater review is done on lien applications and subdivisions on tax lots, whether it's 1 through 5, 1 through 9. One of the things that I had a discussion about this morning was at the time that the site improvements are underway and we have inspectors out there from development engineering, construction inspection, kind of towards some portion of that activity, maybe toward the latter part, is get some of our, two of our people in building to look at it from, okay, how are these lots, when builders come in, how are these lots gonna handle stormwater? You know, site improvements for frontage improvements and interior access roads, and that all works great, but when you're talking about pulling building permits, we get these typicals, and when the typicals come in, there are times that the typicals don't work. They don't follow the rear. They don't follow to a weep hole. So we just need to kind of tighten up that that time between site improvements and then the actual building on individual lots. We have a contract from a third-party plan reviewer that we would like to execute and get a backlog of building plan reviews out to a plan reviewer. And we're not talking about our standard third-party structural engineering folks who do three-story apartment buildings and office and resident office and industrial and large warehouse, just more commonplace, ordinary residential plan review. So we have a contract, hope to execute it as soon as I know how in purchasing things work, because the purchasing manager retired last year. We want to hold a work session with a workshop with our current lien applicants. We've learned some things recently through a report that I've run in the new system. So we want to reach out to people applying in lien, have them come in for a couple hours, maybe in 2 weeks from tomorrow, and just say, okay, here's, you all are using the new system, and here's what we've discovered. Really, the point of that would be to re-emphasize that when you're submitting for lien, when you're submitting complete and accurate application materials, you're going to get through. And then there might be a tweak or two that still doesn't kick you out of lien, but I think we want to kind of highlight, okay, if you're coming in and you have trusses that don't match the floor plan, if you can get that to us like right away, maybe we can keep you in. If you're just kind of dragging that out, you might get kicked out. There are some things that we're looking at in the permit center to get more bandwidth and kind of lien appointments, maybe 50% increase, maybe 100% increase, depending on how we can pull and utilize resources in the permit center. Tax lots, we have a backlog of tax lots and legal lot determinations, so I'm asking for kind of an all hands on deck next weekend for folks to come in. So there are a number of things that we are employing like immediately so that we can make a dent in the next, you know, through June, so that July, August, September, we're not so far behind the eight ball that you know, the comment about, well, I can't get an appointment until the middle of July, you know, 2 weeks from now, isn't, I can't get an appointment until the end of August. I don't want that to happen. So there are a number of things that we're doing. I kind of sent something to Bob Stevens, who is the deputy county manager and my boss at the moment. I was just saying, you know, we've kind of commandeered the permit center, and we're making some tweaks operationally to get more throughput. As an FYI, Chuck Kreider is no longer with the county. I'm recruiting for a permit center manager. I think it'll be posted tomorrow. So if you know anybody, I'm going to be looking for somebody who has excellent customer service experience, professional management, an experienced manager, somebody who really builds a sense of teamwork, and then somebody who knows a little bit about, you know, building and permitting generally. So I was hoping Jim would be up here. He may show up here in a few minutes. But I will field any questions you all have. I sent something to Heath Henderson about our stormwater reviews that are farmed out. You know, we all need to kind of pull together as a team, and you know, we're kind of part of a big process. So
I appreciate. I mean, I know it just adds on to your workload, so I appreciate you being proactive and taking it on. Because those permit times, I know, are getting longer right now. I submitted for a lien process, and it made more sense
just
not to.
Just appointments, right?
Just the appointment. Yeah. It made more sense not to, because it was 40 days out. So I appreciate jumping on it and not waiting for someone else to get in place to try and work on a solution. I'm sure you know, staff-wise, you guys are aware we're seeing a more substantial influx of national builders coming into our market.
Yeah.
That's going to continue to increase. You're going to continue to see a high demand for these lien process in place, whether it even be for AHO or other regional builders. There's going to be, that is going to become more of the norm as far as what's going to happen. I'm sure market trends can adjust that in the future, but for the foreseeable future, you're definitely going to see an increase in that. So I think preparing for that is being diligent, and I definitely would support and tell you what I see in the market, that you're going to see what you've seen now, the increase is going to continue. It's not going to just hold that same pace. It will grow.
Well, the idea of getting more lien applications just daily is a matter of how many permit techs we can assign that work.
Yeah.
And if I can get one more body, I double the production and the throughput, right? And we're hoping that we can do that. And we're talking like fairly soon, next week, the week after. That's the idea. There are some challenges that we've experienced. And I don't know how much of a hardhead I become in terms of when you make an appointment, stick to your appointment. Don't call at 1:30. I'm not going to make my 1 o'clock appointment. We have people schedule that. Well, we have some folks who monopolize appointment time, and a lot of times they make those appointments, and there are times they drop them. It's not fair to those who are waiting.
Yeah.
And we do have people that we call. If it's not 1:45 at a 1 o'clock appointment time, if it's like, we know, we'll call somebody, hey, there's been a cancellation, come in. We have some builders, well, we had a national builder submit 24 homes through lien. Whatever that took, we issued the permits and we notified them. And they said, you know, that product's not working for our market right now, so we're not gonna pick those up. We're not gonna build those. So we're gonna go in a new direction. That's hard to swallow when you have other people who want that time.
Yeah.
There are other things that, you know, I think the last BIA Clark County Building Roundtable, we had like 100 permits that were notified, ready to issue, right? And they were just sitting. It's like going through that express line in the grocery aisle, right? And the conveyor, people need to pick their bags up, take it out of their car and go home. Well, the conveyor was just warehousing. So that's frustrating, I'm sure, for people who are like, well, these guys have got lien appointments and they're not even picking up their permits. Or these guys have got lien appointments and they've said, oh, we're not gonna build those 24 plans.
And dealing with large corporations, I mean, that's gonna continue.
That?
So it's not gonna change.
Well, there's some unusual circumstances from what I hear, and I don't know.
Okay.
I think there was
I'm hoping that that's an isolated incident.
Yeah.
You know.
That did sound crazy when you first hear it. I was at that and I'm like, that's ridiculous.
I don't know.
And asked around and there was a little bit more too.
Okay.
In my experience in dealing with some of the larger builders is that you can though have from one week to another. Right, it's not common, but it will happen. A change in direction or a change, and it can happen from corporate leadership and trickle down, and then you'll feel those effects.
So some of those might take advantage of a master plan program where they have a master plan on file, and you know, several, and they think, okay, we're going to pull the trigger on these, but not these.
Yeah.
You know, so that's an idea. Jim, you want to join me at the table? We were just talking about the different operational tweaks that we'll be making to help with the permitting process. So I mentioned the master plan. We do need to get up on continue improving stormwater, getting maybe a couple folks at the inspection level so that we have, we're ahead of the game instead of behind the game on how actual building, individual building lots work. Lean, getting maybe another body assigned to appointments and doubling our throughput. The workshop that we'll have in a couple weeks.
And I just discovered that I don't know how much it interests the group in here, but just statistically, a lot of the deep end, that's the plans waiting to be reviewed, are about 50% liens that didn't make lien. And so I was just discussing with the plan reviewers that do those, a way to efficiently finish up what they started in lien, because they've already spent an hour and a half dealing with it in lien, and then they put it back to the deep end, and another plans examiner is going to pick it up and take the same amount of time. Well, that's not efficient. So what they suggested, that plans examiners are currently doing lien in my office, and said, hey, how about this? We'll finish what we're doing, and it didn't make lien, and we're waiting for something, but we're going to hold it at our desk, and then we're going to pick a date that seems reasonable, and I don't know what that is now, but a lien that doesn't make it, rather than go clear to the end of the line, it's going to go somewhere in the middle. So you can't be rewarded for bad behavior, and we don't want people then taking advantage of lien and saying, well, I'll just do kind of and then hope I don't make it, and then I'll still get my 5 days. That isn't really going to work, because then people will start figuring out. But if we put it at 3 weeks or something like that, you'll go in the middle of the date bin and not mess up the flow of things. We aren't reviewing it twice like early on. So I just discovered that that's something that was happening in plan review and in the permit center, kind of reviewing everything in the permit center. So there's another efficiency we just have figured out, not to mention doing twice as many liens and not having the folks wait for it. Did you say that part?
Yes, go ahead and elaborate though.
So we're looking at changing lien to rather than an appointment, to wait and have it reviewed on the land use level as far as whether it's going to come in or not, and then sent to the plan reviewers. We just have a 10-minute appointment to come in and submit it and pay, and we'll make the assumption that it's going to make it through lien, and then the permit techs will get a group of those liens and process them in a factory kind of manner, rather than a 1 hour, 1 hour, 1 hour. They can just take them and lump them like my plan reviewers now just lump them. They look at them the next morning, all of them. So we'll do that with the permit techs, and we think we can probably move to 1.5 or 2 times as many lien reviews. And then we'll continue to try to educate folks to, hey, you can get these out really quickly if you just do a little bit of review on your submittals. You know, we got to double check the list.
Writing notes.
But even if you do a decent job and still miss something, rather than it going to the very back of the line, it won't get a real bonus, but it won't go to the very end of the line and mess up our system.
If someone misses something really minor, though, you guys are trying to communicate to them because, I mean, people do mistakes.
Yeah, we kind of have the plan reviewers currently when they're doing a lien, if it's like, oh, gosh, you're missing this, we don't have it official, because if it's official, then people say, well, I know so-and-so gets to be on the special. No matter what you do, you have to kind of deal with the worst cases. But they do, in fact, have a shelf where they say, get me that page, it's missing. And
they generally know the people that are trying their best to do it. And then
this will be kind of the next version. Okay, you got it pretty well. If we get just one that shouldn't have ever been in lien, hopefully they won't even start the review and we'll just kick it to the back of the line. So if it was a Crayola drawing, we shouldn't even start lien. It should just be, you're out of here.
And I think what I've heard is that people would rather hear the predictability than we'll take it in, but we can't tell you when anything's going to happen.
Yes.
You know, when's the, you know, how many weeks will this take us? Oh, between 10 and 20. Well, that doesn't help much. But it's like, well, with predictability, you know, this is going to be accepted. Here's our timeline. Or this is way off. It's gonna go to a date bin, and our date bin currently is X date. You know, so it doesn't. You don't get caught in between, you know, the two, because that's you know. Even though it's hard to swallow, the predictability is better than the unknown.
And did you talk about the remodel?
No, I've not mentioned that.
Just another kind of thing that I'm talking to Dave with the Remodelers Council today was, hey, how about something we work with that group? Keep those remodel permits out of the date bin as well, to the degree that we can, and we probably have something like we did with the commercial TI permits, where we have, if it's interior and you're moving a couple of walls and adding a couple of beams and a window, then we'd turn that into a level one remodel that we issue over the counter. And then maybe a level two is we issue in a couple of days, because we have to look at a couple of other things that are structural and got to make sure everything's copacetic. And then a level three is like you're doing a whole interior demo and building stairs and everything else. That goes into the date bin, or it goes into at least a remodel date bin. The point being, taking that whole group of remodeling permits and handling them in a different way, so they aren't amongst all of the other permits waiting to happen. So. Right now, the date includes every type of permit, and taking some group and handling them different based on what's in that type of construction is probably smarter than what we're currently doing.
So those are just some, you know, give you guys a sense of what we're working on, and, you know, we're going to be putting some of these things into place, like, you know, as soon as possible next week, you know, through the June, I certainly hope to see more and more and more tweaks for productivity gains. I mentioned to somebody that because I have a conscience, you know, when I have a long plan, long ago planned vacation at the end of July, so that's the end of July, not the beginning of July, but the end of July, I can go on this vacation and not feel like I'm like, man, we're still way behind the eight ball on this stuff. I can't, you know, can't enjoy myself. Da, da, da. So, you know, the next couple of weeks is going to be kind of crunch time for us, and through June, so that we can really get a jump on. And heck, hopefully, we have a decent construction season that lasts through the end of October or first of November. Because then this winter just sucks.
Yeah. Did you have a pair?
Oh, I was just going to say, just because there's different builders, right, that everyone at this table sits and talks to. And so what I hear from you is over the next 2 weeks is have some patience, and we should see some improvements in the next couple of weeks. And maybe then for those that are in process, it may even be if they had later dates. Is there, what are you going to do with those where they have, let's say they're in a lien process and they're 30 days out or what have you? Is there a follow-up in that regard, or how do you handle that?
Good question. I think if we tweak the way the appointments work and we get that many more in a day, then the 30 days gets shortened to.
But I think to his question, the ones that are kind of sitting there in the shelf now.
Right, that are in the queue. Do you follow up with them, or do you just start?
So with Todd and Igor that do most of the liens, what I want to do is have them go back through there and find the ones that they did and have them do them. So currently, they're up for the next person that grabs a file.
Right.
But if I just say, why don't you guys go in and find your previous liens and process them, assuming it's been at least 21 days that we're kind of thinking of as it.
Yeah.
Then having them start to pull them and getting them into their daily work as opposed to just letting them languish.
Okay.
Not punish the current people in line, right?
Right. Okay.
Yeah, so we're gonna, you know, the positions that were approved Tuesday, I mean, just getting people on board takes a while, and you go through a recruitment process and getting somebody trained, you know, it's the best case scenario is we have people, you know, hitting the permit center, making some, you know, contributions by the end of the summer. It's just the reality of it. And you all know, I've said this since last year, last summer, is, you know, finding good people, qualified people, experienced people in anything, in anything.
We know.
It's difficult. I mean, whether it's permit or planning or engineering or building, you know, to get some of your crews, I'm sure it's not
absolutely
easy.
No.
I saw.
We lost both our permit techs a week and a half ago, so right in the middle of all this process, we just put in two brand new permits.
So I saw a posting for a job up north in the Puget Sound area for a public position. They had a decent salary, but they had a $5,000 signing bonus.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, right? That's what we're competing with for a plans examiner.
Yeah, I just lost three inspectors in will be within a 2-week period. So, wow. One's moving off to Arizona, and one's moving off to the Spokane area. And there's some. So they both had other reasons, but one of the things was. There's competition.
There's a lot
of competition.
Okay. So, you know, I'm feeling very, I'm very aware. I have a lot of heightened sensitivity, but I also am kind of people who have worked with me for years. I mean, I'll accept the challenge. I'm excited about the challenges to try to really make some headway. I was just mentioning to Councilors Bolton and Olson that, you know, there are these things that we're going to be employing here in the next couple weeks, and my aim is to get a real jump so that we don't have a lot of anxiety through this building season.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah.
Good work, guys.
Yeah,
just one quick, just to close it
and
up.
And I still may be asking you for on some of the stormwater stuff.
Yeah,
so I appreciate that.
Glad to help.
Yeah.
Getting this out to the general public and the builders, if you guys want to provide something, I'm sure you're probably already on it, but good stuff here, maybe summarize it. So
I have a meeting tomorrow with Avely and Jamie.
Yeah.
So I've got a few things in a memo, and then I'll kind of complete those thoughts and have something either tomorrow or early next week. One of the things too, if you know, for your builder friends, and they have these inspections that result in corrections that can be very simply done and then done through the FaceTime. There's huge time savings in that, right? And what's the program called again? SureLook.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you have some of those inspections that can be made, and the inspector doesn't have to drive out somewhere.
Especially re-inspections.
Yeah, I appreciate all your patience and your help. I know Eric and Steve, they came in a few weeks ago on a Friday, and we talked through some things and redlined some things, and there's still a few things that we'll be working on
to our follow up.
So I appreciate all of your assistance.
Thank you. Any other questions for Marty? Public comment from anyone? Steve?
Two things real quick. Well, first of all, we do have plans in process, and I think we're finding a place where this development agreement is being implemented pretty much exactly how we envisioned it. So that's pretty cool. Looking forward to translating that model to future projects. I may have this all wrong, but I thought I attended a whole lot of those public hearings and meetings. My understanding was that the council revisited the park impact fee issue and the incremental increase back in December. The decision was made that even though we had a planning commission in favor of a slow increase, of a 7-0 decision, that the council was advised that they could, because it was a capital facilities plan update and not a comprehensive plan update, they couldn't alter park impact fees at that time, but that the issue would be revisited at the next comprehensive plan update process. That was my understanding. I was at the hearing where that vote was supposed to be here. It was dead silent. They never took a vote.
Yeah. Anyone know? I don't know what the commission did with that.
About in, presentations on it here that we went through planning commission and literally died at council. That's as big an issue to us as any other out there, because the two local developments we have it's a multi-million dollar issue. And so I was surprised when we had that comp plan update that was strictly limited to fixing the appeal process, and that issue wasn't part of it. I'm not suggesting this group do anything about it, but I know it's discussed here. I know we have presentations on it.
Are they implementing those fees? Because I thought they were put on hold. The increase was put on hold. I know that was
the decision.
But it might have still been in the comp plan paperwork, but they were going to revisit it.
So anyway, that was the comment that I had, just because it had been in front of this body before. The other thing, and just indulge me for a second, because this is near and dear to my heart, but I'm on the Woodland School Board, part of which is in Clark County, and yesterday I attended, on behalf of the private sector, I attended a governor's summit on what they call CCL, but it's essentially a career-connected learning. Okay, and it fits this industry perfectly, because what it is they're trying to get kids that now are just on either four-year college tracks or they're not on any track. This was done across 26 meetings by webinar across the states. There were over 1,000 people participated in this yesterday, including the governor and the superintendent of public instruction. And so they're very serious about this. And one of the proposals is to begin allowing high school credit for work experience, especially in the STEM area, science, technology, engineering, and math. And where we all talk about we have, need for permanent techs, there's going to be some proposals set up that would allow a lot of us in this room, if they're in the private sector, to have kids at the high school level do a CAD professional, type CAD work, earning certifications available as part of the future workforce. And I really encourage this group or through the county or whoever to look into that, because it's very serious, and it's definitely a way over the next 3 to 5 years for us to increase our local capacity, permit techs, plan reviewers, all that stuff. Those are all skills that can be taught at the high school level, I'm sure, at least to some degree, for internship programs or whatever. So I just wanted to bring that up. I appreciate it.
So I know that back in the day, the Skills Center had limited programs.
Right.
And now it's called the Cascadia Technical Academy,
right.
CTA. They have a couple dozen programs. Some of them fit into what you all would like to see.
Right.
My son goes to the school there, and if local governments could kind of plug into that maybe a bit more.
Well,
I know that we have, you know, a good friend of mine was doing a lot of work up north in Snohomish County about where are we going to get our next, you know, generation of planners, building inspectors, engineers that want to work in the public sector. And he was building inroads into educational institutions in K-12 and then University of Washington and some of the satellite campuses. It is something that if you look at the demographics, it's scary to think about where we're going to get some of our
employees. Part of the problem is
employees.
Self-inflicted. This thing was very well publicized, and I was in a room of about 50 people, and I was the only individual from the private sector that took the time to attend. So, and these are all people that are totally open. That when they talk about, you know, apprenticeships and stuff like that, which is all part of this, you know, you have the union people and trades. Nobody understands that there's a whole entitlement process that doesn't require a big shop facility to teach the skills to do it. And so part of the problem is our professional development community hasn't been very good at engaging the secondary school level. Because those teachers that teach that stuff, they don't know anything about the entitlement process. Why would they? Most people think engineers are people that build bridges, right? They don't understand civil engineers and geotechs and stuff.
Carolyn?
Yes. Mom? I know.
So that's my point. I think it's incumbent on us as an industry. I know I'm starting to bring kids. I've got three or four kids I'm bringing into the office to look at our plants and, you know, how we do our plants and stuff, because they already have some CAD experience So I don't know. I don't know where that would go, but I think Clark County especially should be taking the lead on that particular association or that effort. It's going to serve. I mean, you're talking, these are skills that translate between the public and private sector. There's very few areas in the professional world where you can just flow in and out of the public and private sector relatively easily, so that you can have mobility and job security. Might give up wages for job security and public sector stuff like that.
So
that's all I'm saying.
I'm going to tap onto him a little bit and tell you, I maybe you know about it, maybe you don't, we hire CCOPs frequently, and they're civil engineers that are in between their, well, it starts their junior year, I believe, so they've gotten through some of the engineering basics at college, and they frequently get there through STEM programs. But we bring them in for 6 months at a time, and they delay their graduation by a quarter to come have that experience with us. And they'd like to have them to have private experience and to have public. And I think when the economy went down, most of the sponsors for the program that took these kids and worked with them were public sector. And then when the boom goes the other way, then the private sector's trying to snag them up. So don't forget there's programs out there like that. They come from Oregon State, Washington State, and from U of P and PSU, I believe, in this area. So I would encourage anybody and everybody that has an opportunity, they don't have to be designers and they don't have to be a construction engineer to bring them in. They can be plans reviewers, they can be drafters, they can be putting permit packages together on the private side, that kind of stuff. So there's lots out there that they're pretty savvy folks, and they're definitely on the top end of the programs usually too. So anyway, I'm just going to tap into, you do the high school end, I'll do the college end of that. That's
absolutely.
Anyway, if you want to know more about this, no.
And that's the problem is there's when the kids get out of school and they understand at that point when they actually need a job that, oh, engineering is maybe a good field or something. What we're trying to get them to do is to deal with that at the high school level now, so that they're properly prepared for that. So,
good stuff.
Okay. Well, that's tied right in. That was a good subject in terms of getting some additional help, which we all need, presumably. Any other public comment?
I think that's something to say. Yeah. I did not know this until about 2 hours ago. I'm just going to come and enjoy what's been happening here recently. But I just found out yesterday that I had been competing for a job with the city of Seattle, being a resident engineer in the most extreme northeast corner of the state. And I didn't get it, so I'm available. And I just noticed that development engineering is going to have a position here, and it says the first review of applications is going to be June 23rd, so I can hit the ground running tomorrow. So, I just became available yesterday.
Don't let him get out the door.
Anybody doesn't remember, I was here on the staff at the inception of the Development Engineering Advisory Board, because the whole reason I became a member of the staff at Clark County was back in 2006. Position I was hired for was vacated by a person who was demoted. And one thing I learned was from the leadership books that leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less. So by demoting this gentleman and keeping him on staff, basically the culture that he created remained, and it was not conducive to getting things done. They're out the door fast. So when the position that I had was eliminated, then it was actually about 1 month before I got my layoff letter, I was got myself in big trouble, because all the inspectors were leaving their caseloads on my desk. And a bunch of them were stuff that might have had a punch list with one dead bush or something like that. That here's these bonds being held hostage, and I go, well, all I'm going to do is just here's my caseload mark on the desk. So I'm surrounded by these piles, and we got a nasty letter from IFPD Local 17 in Seattle. It said, one of your managers is doing bargaining at work. And so I was looking at this pile of stuff around me. I just wanted to get cleaned out. I wasn't allowed to touch it. So anyway.
Well, I appreciate that, and apply.
Yeah.
The beauty of this position is they'll be able to garnish my wages for union dues, so can't use that argument anymore.
Jeff, real quick. So for next month, right now our agenda is open. So not that we have to have it right here in the moment, but please send me any ideas or presentation topics that you'd like to make sure we get in on July. So.
Okay.
And I wonder on the things that we have on, our list of things to consider, I guess what Marty's input would be on maybe things that, if there's anything they want us to hold off on because of transition with the county manager, or if that doesn't...
Yeah, about the work plan, our work plan and all that.
If that doesn't affect any, I don't know if there's something that would prefer to hold off on or not.
Okay, that's a good... All right. Well, if anyone has any suggestions, send them out. I'll take a look at it too, and Greg and I can talk about it.
That's great.
I'm sure we can.
Yeah.
If there's any number, and possibly that'll be a month from now, so an update on Marty on some of these things that he and Jim are talking about would be a good one to add in there, because that's right now that is hitting critical mass, and it's going to be a rough summer because of the rough winter. Everyone's going to be scrambling.
Yep. Yeah, there's
going to be.
That's all got to come down the pipeline.
I think they already are.
No, they already are. Everyone looks like everyone's got deer walking around deer in the headlights. At least I am. Well, thank you very much. We'll see you all next month. And if you've got ideas, that'd be great. We're adjourned.
Thank you.
Move to adjourn.
Yeah, Michael.
I just curious on the timing of the
and you're running hard there. That's the first time somebody wanted to
the new Peterson Cap facility in Westboro.
Gotcha.
And Jared is the project manager over there. He is somewhat tasked with getting some work on the side of the river. And they, from what I understand, what they do is they collect the owners. Up to and including, you know, getting their property purchased. So he's the owner, right? And so Jared was working